as soon as you turn 35, you're an advanced age and your risks go up and all of these things change. And in the fertility space, it's like, oh, you're 40, this like magical number. Like as you age in the chronological way, that things change. But that does not equate one for one to how healthy you are or your ovarian environment. I have had patients over 40 be very healthy, conceive very easily. Age is not a diagnosis. You could be healthier at 40 than you are at 30. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I am your co-host, Dr. Leah Gordon, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Morgan and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance you've been looking for through a fresh, functional, and balanced lens. Today's episode is a really good one. We talk about fertility after 40. This is a very common question that we get asked because the fertile age is shifting more and more to women over 35 and even into their 40s. And I basically walk through the things to think about and consider that you might want to take into heart if you are in your late 30s or in your 40s and still wanting to have a baby. This is a masterclass style episode. We share so many good golden nuggets. So let's get started. Okay, welcome back. We have a two-part series for you today about fertility. Today is about fertility over 40, and then part two is going to be pregnancy and birth over 40, because this has been a really highly recommended episode topic because it is applicable to so many of your guys' lives. And we literally do these podcasts for you, and so we want to know, what do you want to hear about? And we will literally make it for you. So I was in my prep for my own episode. Pregnancy brain is very real, just so everybody knows. Maybe mm-hmm. we'll do an episode about pregnancy brain too, because I think it's great. It's interesting to know what is happening. I mean, we have MRI results to show what's actually happening. But anyway, in 1986, I think was the statistics, the birth rate for women giving birth to babies over age 40 was like 3.8. And in 2022, so even still 4 years ago, it was 12.5. So this is becoming a much more common thing. And it has to do with several different factors, a couple of them being things we've also talked about on this podcast, like feminism and work and businesses and career, pushing women to start their families later, but then also sometimes choice, and then also sometimes infertility, you know, years of infertility, they're just not conceiving until then. So this episode is going to be all about, you know, what are the factors that make fertility over 40 different? And then how can you optimize and change that for yourself? And then the part two is going to be about what are the risks and benefits in your pregnancy and how it might impact birth and things. And again, how to, like, you know, what are the recommendations, how to mitigate some of those impacts as much as possible. So why don't we dive in? Leah, take it away. All right. I have a lot to get through, so I'll try to be succinct and get through all of the points. There's actually like 11 of them, but I will be succinct. So the first one is chronological age. That is, I'm 35, I'm 37, I'm 40, does not equal ovarian environment. And a lot of people are told, you know, as soon as you turn 35, you're an advanced age and your risks go up and all of these things change. And in the fertility space, it's like, oh, you know, it's like, oh, you're 40, this like magical number. Like the minute you have this birthday, I even have patients who are like, I have to have this baby before 40. You know, like they have this anxiety around the number of the chronological age of what they are. And there is some reality, absolutely, to the fact that as you age in the chronological way, that things change. But that does not equate one for one to how healthy you are or your ovarian environment. I have had patients over 40 be very healthy, conceive very easily, and on paper, looking at their labs and just their health in general, you would never know how old they are if you didn't know their birthday, and it's almost shocking when you find out. And I've had the opposite to be true, where I've had late 20s, early 30s patients who, if you looked at their labs and their health on paper, you would think they're 45. So it doesn't necessarily matter the chronological age as much as the health, but there are some realities that increased age is more time on this earth, right? More toxin exposure,
longer time of having habits that maybe lead to less of a healthy environment. So it's not always that it's just age by itself, but it could be time of exposure to certain things. But in general, the chronological age isn't necessarily a piece. That's the first thing. Before I say the second thing, I just want to tell a quick story. So I grew up believing that women who had babies at 40 was like a grandma, because my grandma, she went in to the hospital at 40 because she was having a bunch of weird symptoms. She had a lot of prolapse. She had had 6 kids, actually, or this 5 at this point. She'd had 5 kids. And she went in for a hysterectomy because, you know, back then it was, oh, a woman has issues, let's just take out her uterus. That was just sort of like the catch-all treatment for so many women's health issues. So she went in for her hysterectomy, and they had her on the exam table, opened up and everything, and they basically said, oh, there's a baby in there. So this was in the 1950s, late 50s, and I don't think it was a practice, at least at her hospital, to do a pregnancy test before doing surgery. And so they sewed her back up and was like, well, like the chance of you carrying this baby is probably very low because we literally just cut you open. But they sewed her back up, and that was my mom. So
that is crazy. I remember the first time I had a patient in clinic in school telling me about, this isn't why she was here. She was like an older woman. Yeah. But somehow we started talking about kids and stuff, and she remembers, you know, they didn't do ultrasounds. And so out comes one baby, and the doctor goes, oh, nope, too small. There's another one in there. And she goes, what? Because they had no idea. And she ended up having twins. And I've actually heard that story from a lot of people when their children are born, like, you know, in the 50s, early 60s, there was no way for them to know that there was multiples. Mm-hmm. And so just that kind of idea is, there's something kind of magical about the mystery in that, but also the fact that something so simple as a pregnancy test, I wonder when pregnancy tests were developed. We should know that, but yeah, that is crazy.
It became routine. Yeah. That they would do them all the time. Cause now you always do it before surgeries, usually. Maybe not.
Well,
actually,
I think like anything they, you know, to rule out, well, now they would do an ultrasound. They'd be like, why are you having all these symptoms? Let's check.
Right.
And they would see a human.
Totally. Yes. That makes sense. But so at the time, even though I'm sure there were many women having babies late into those years, but I remember growing up with the story that my grandma was so old. She was a 40-year-old woman with a baby. It was like totally an accident. They didn't want that. Like, she was so old. She already had kids that were 20. She had a 20-year-old. She went in because her son was 20 years old, and she went in and was like, oh, there's a baby in there. You know, it just felt so, to me, I was like, wow, a 40-year-old mother. That was my grandma. Like, that's crazy.
Okay, but here is the thing, though, is how do they prevent it then? Because my mom is one of nine. She's the youngest of nine. And she had all of her siblings were born before my grandma was 33. And I'm like, so then what did my grandma do between, because they were Catholic, didn't believe in birth control. So what, you know, that's how they had nine kids in 13 years. And I'm just like, how did you prevent then from 33 on to not get pregnant again? Because what you'd think that they'd be all the time having kids into the 40s.
Yeah. And maybe they did. Gosh, I don't know, because it doesn't make any sense. You'd think they would. Yeah. They didn't have a lot of prevention. So I'm not really sure, but I just remember thinking, wow, that was really old. But now that I'm almost 36, it's like, wow, that's not old at all. You were so young.
Yeah.
You know, like 40 is young in so many ways. And, I think it's different too when you start having children at 16, 17, 18, you know, then in her mind, you know, she probably did feel very old, but relatively speaking, the age is just different now. Like 40 is a very different world. However, we do have to have this conversation of a woman can't reproduce forever. That is a reality. So the second thing it brings me to is egg quality. When it comes to becoming pregnant, it's not necessarily the count of eggs that matters as much. When we talk a lot about advanced age, I'm saying that in air quotes, advanced age fertility, you know, beyond 35, we look at AMH a lot, anti-Müllerian hormone. This is a common marker in fertility, but that tells us our count. How many eggs do we have? And really, this number is most important if you're going to be doing IVF. If you are trying to conceive naturally, AMH is not that impactful because you only ovulate one egg, well, you should be only ovulating one egg to have a natural conception. So it doesn't matter if you recruited 15 eggs that cycle or 5 eggs that cycle. If you have one good strong ovulation, it shouldn't matter. Now, if you are reducing your egg count, your AMH is going down, that can tell you that your egg reserve is declining and you are probably going to have less time of having cycles, because once your eggs are sort of on that lower reserve, your body's like, oh, I guess you're, you know, not going to have many babies in the future. So you eventually start to go into somewhat like a perimenopausal picture where you're not getting that strong ovulation and you aren't maybe necessarily dropping an egg every month. And that can happen prematurely. We call that premature ovarian insufficiency, but it happens normally and biologically in a lot of women's 40s. You know, like there is a time when your egg count gets to the point where it's not there and eventually you go through menopause and that's what it is. So AMH isn't an end-all be-all. If that number is low, you can absolutely still get pregnant naturally. But if you have a really low AMH, that is a sign that you probably don't have as much time as somebody who has a higher AMH. You know, you could be 39 and have a normal, healthy AMH, and you might be able to conceive naturally long until you're 45 or more. Or you could be 39 and have a low AMH, and you might have a year or two, you know? And so the decisions that you make need to be around that. And so it is important to check AMH, but the most important thing is focusing on quality. Egg quality is how healthy, how robust are your eggs, more so than how many are there. And when we talk about egg quality, the two most important, well, the three most important things are the mitochondria. The mitochondria are the energy powerhouses of the cell. They are what allow the cell to divide and grow and do all the things it needs to do. There's 40 times more mitochondria in an egg cell than any other cell in our body. So it's a concentration of a lot of mitochondria. And there are certain things that you can do diet, lifestyle-wise to harm the mitochondria and on the flip side to support and help the mitochondria. So that needs to be a top priority for women in this category.
And this is like where taking the needed egg quality supplement is a really good basic, excuse me, to cover some of the basis of nutrition of what they need. But this is also, I think we have an egg quality episode. We'll put a lot of other past episodes that tie into this one in the show notes for your continued learning.
Yes.
And, you know, but there's also the removing of the things that harm eggs, like the toxins, the environmental toxins, you know, even just something like, it's sad. I wish it wasn't this way, but like, if you have some kind of conventionally made and conventionally fragranced body lotion that you put on your whole entire body every day after a shower for years and years and years, and you're the type of person who for some reason has a more fragile reproductive system, we don't know why, it just is that way, whatever. This is something that is like, why? We don't need this added stress on the whole system. Take it away. Even if you feel like that's a conspiracy theory, it's not. Okay. And you don't need it. Use something different. And and what if it is? What if it is taxing your liver just enough? And it is putting oxidative stress just enough on all those fewer eggs that you have, and they're having a harder time coming to fruition because the mitochondria are a little bit stressed under all of this strain that we're putting on the toxic burden of your body or whatever. You know, there's so many little things that add up, again, cogs in the wheel, but it's like, imagine you have cogs in the wheel, like many factors that are just 2% each of the cogs in the wheel that are adding up to the reason why this is not happening for you. Would you not want to reduce that burden on your body? Yeah, maybe you're making 12 habit changes, but now you're at 24% better function in all these different ways. Also, another thing is, I think I grew up thinking women have like hundreds of thousands of eggs, millions of eggs. Well, and I think we do at some point, you know.
No, we do.
Yeah. But then I guess in my mind, though, I didn't consider time and how they taper off in time. I was like, oh, we just have them like always.
Yeah.
They never go away.
Yeah.
And that's not true.
Totally.
Yeah. And so like, as we get older, there is some regeneration, like there is evidence now that we are creating like more, you know, as time goes on, it's not only whatever you're born with, but you have to remember that every month your body is not just taking one, that whatever the egg is that is ovulated, it's not just recruiting and fostering one. It recruits and it fosters several every month. And it says like, okay, let's see who's going to make it to the top. And then whoever makes it to the top is the egg that bursts through the ovary, goes down the fallopian tube, waits to be fertilized. All the other ones that were like the brides in waiting being chosen in Bridgerton, but they didn't get chosen.
You finally watched Bridgerton and now we can talk about it.
All the girls whose season it is and they're not getting chosen, they don't have what do they call it? No one's calling on them.
Yep. They are not the diamond. The diamond is the egg that is chosen.
Yes, there is one diamond. I mean, sometimes, you know, fraternal twins, there's two diamonds, but like that's rarer. It does, the chances increase as your age goes on. But all those other eggs don't just like go away and then wait their season next time. They degrade. They're done forever. And so every month you have a big portion of eggs that are going down. Imagine you get your period at 11. Okay. And how many months of cycles are you having where a handful of eggs, how many is it, would you say, on an average month that are being recruited that don't become the diamond?
In a younger woman, between 15 and 20 for each ovary. So
each ovary. Okay. So that's 30 eggs every month. And now you're at 40 and you're trying to get pregnant. So we have to understand how much has gone down over time. I'm not saying this to be like negative and downy. It's just to understand the physiology and to be like, oh, okay. And it makes sense. You know, you're like, oh, okay, there's a certain number. Whereas like men have constant regenerative sperm. They're not, you know, like, I mean, yes, every time they ejaculate, they lose millions of them, but they are also being made by the millions constantly at all times.
Did you know that while 97% of women take a prenatal vitamin, over 95% are still deficient? That's why I love recommending Needed's Prenatal. Unlike most prenatals, Needed doses nutrients in the right forms and amounts that go above and beyond to really support both mama and baby. I actually worked with Needed for years. We spent over 3 years researching, working with practitioners, and really intentionally choosing every single nutrient form and dosage that's put into the prenatal. And now we have the data to back it up. In an IRB study, they found that the women who took the Needed prenatal had higher blood levels of key nutrients like vitamin B6, vitamin D, vitamin B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2, and selenium, compared to women who are taking a regular prenatal. Even more powerful, only the Needed group had significant amounts of vitamin D in their system, which is essential for supporting the immune system, bone development, blood sugar, blood pressure regulation, and so much more. This study reinforces what we've known for a long time, that real nourishment really makes a difference, and the proper nutrients support fertility, pregnancy, and baby's health. Needed isn't just aiming for adequacy, they're supporting what's possible. No matter where you are along your fertility or pregnancy journey, Needed is what I recommend. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first subscription order. Again, head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, now back to the show. Yeah, it's a different process. They're not born with all of them. When we're in utero as little baby girls, we develop all the eggs that we have. And yes, there is some, like you mentioned, research on stem cells and regeneration. And there is some interesting research on using stem cell regeneration for ovarian regeneration and those kinds of things, which is something you could look into. I wouldn't depend on it and be like, oh, I'm good. I'm not going to work on my health or do anything else because I'm just going to depend on stem cell regeneration to work for me when I'm in my 40s. But it can be an option for people, especially who have, you know, low egg reserve and things like that. So that is something, like you said, to be aware of, both the amounts going down and also the quality of them. So that leads me to point number three, which is there are a lot of things that impact our eggs more as we get older. And one of them is blood sugar. So blood sugar is how well you keep the spikes and drops of insulin and the blood glucose in your bloodstream. If that is all over the place, like you wake up and have coffee, you know, you don't have breakfast, you go to Starbucks, get a coffee, or you're working out early without any food, and maybe you're doing intermittent fasting because you saw it was trendy. Or what I see a lot is women are really worried about weight gain in their late 30s and 40s because things have shifted and changed in their hormones, and so they're having more abdominal fat and just, you know, they're aging in general, and they're thinking of themselves in their 20s, and they're not that way anymore. And so they're sort of starving themselves. And there's just a lot of practices that I see because there is a fear of the aesthetics of how they look as they get older. But this greatly impacts fertility because you need to have blood sugar balance. You need to have a healthy metabolic foundation for eggs and for your hormones. Oxidative damage and inflammation can become a really big problem. Oxidative damage is anything that cells can be damaged by, and that can come from toxins in our environment, stress. It can come from different
lack of sleep.
Yeah, lack of sleep. If you have microbiome imbalances in your gut, your vagina, these can create inflammation and damage into your cells. And so, yes, age in general, like the act of actually aging, if you put a banana on a counter, it eventually will age, right? It will turn brown and then black, and then it degrades into mush. Like that, there is a process of living things that degrade over time. That is true. But a lot of times with humans, especially with eggs, even though we're born with all of our eggs, we recruit a certain amount and those mature as a group every month. And the ecosystem and the health that you have each month can impact the quality of those eggs. So you have a lot of room to optimize and change what that environment is that those eggs are being recruited in every month. Like you could be healthier at 40 than you are at 30 if you change your lifestyle and the environment of your body. But you need to know and understand what those things are and how to optimize and reduce them, which is a lot of what I teach inside of Womanhood Wellness, my membership, and a lot of the places that, you know, you look to for optimal health and functional health. We're a lot of times teaching these foundations that seem boring, but they are the key foundation to everything. So oxidative damage, inflammation, and blood sugar are key.
I also just want to say that how many times have you and I both known women who kind of had an unhealthier 20s and 30s, and then they find all of, you know, oh my gosh, I feel so much better when I'm working out, I'm lifting weights, I'm eating really well, I have good blood sugar balance, whatever. And then they accidentally get pregnant in their like mid 40s. Yeah. Because all of a sudden they are so much healthier than they were beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 It absolutely can happen. Our age is not a diagnosis. You know, we see that a lot in the conventional world, even in the brain health space. It's like, oh, you're just old. It's like, no, there can be totally healthy old people that have their cognition up until the day they die. I mean, that's age is not a diagnosis. It's not a disease, but it can contribute. The biggest thing is a lot of people, it's 10 more years of toxin exposure. It's 10 more years of that inflammation. It's 10 more years of stress. It's 10 more years of, you know, fill in the blank. So not only is it just the process of age, but it's also the time of exposure of things that lead to mitochondrial breakdown and things like that.
Yeah, I love that because it's like, as with many aspects, and we're not constantly trying to just bash the conventional system. It's just that what feels like happened is that sometime in the like mid to late 19th century, you know, like in the mid to late 90s, we sort of like stopped evolving with what we thought about a lot of things, or we created systems and we were like, this is the way that life is. This is the best way to educate kids. This is the best way to do medicine and insurance and da 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 da. And then now, I mean, obviously we've had technological advancements and we've had scientific advancements, but it takes a really long time for those things to be implemented into certain institutions like hospitals, et cetera. And so this idea of even just, oh, well, you're just over 40. Like I come up against this all the time with induction of women over 40. They are so pressured to induce at 40 weeks, maximum 41 weeks. Their doctors will not let them go into spontaneous labor whenever that happens. And it's just like, and why? And why? And they're looking at stats that are old and not individual. And it's like, why? What does this have? You know, think about what if this person, instead of the 10 years of accumulation of bad habits, has had 10 years of reversal of bad habits and is in the best place ever and is going to rock it. And like, you know, they don't even bat an eye at the potentially extremely unhealthy 32-year-old who's been having years and years and years of terrible health and, you know, or whatever. It's just like,
I know,
because it's overall the root fix of the problem would be to look at each individual patient before you as an individual and assess all those factors. And they just, they don't do that. They can't do that within the insurance model that they have to work under, and it all just has to crumble to the ground before we can rebuild.
Yeah. It does. It does. All the systems are crumbling. It's a 1 year. It's gonna be a wild year. But okay, so that leads me to the next point, number four, which is ovulation power and quality. So these kind of go together. We've talked about egg quality, but as a woman gets older, her ovulation can change as well. And ovulation, a lot of people think of it as binary, like you either ovulate or you don't. And it is to some degree, but you can have a stronger ovulation or a weaker ovulation. And what really this comes down to is how healthy, again, the follicle is that is surrounding the egg that becomes ovulated. And that eventually turns into what's called the corpus luteum or the corpus luteum, whatever you want to say. And from that is what makes progesterone. And progesterone is this key hormone that we have to have high enough to become pregnant and stay pregnant. So when you are getting older, if that health isn't there, which is, yes, for egg quality, which is, you know, how healthy is the actual egg that becomes the embryo, but also how healthy is the follicle around that egg that eventually becomes progesterone. And that leads me into number five, which is short luteal phases and progesterone deficiencies. This is very, very common as women become older because for all the same reasons, the biggest key hitters that affect the follicle development and then progesterone production are inflammation. Key, key, key. And inflammation can come from if you're eating foods that your body doesn't love, like maybe gluten or corn or conventional dairy or lots of sugar, you can have a lot of inflammation. If you have hidden infections like Lyme or gut dysbiosis or mold or some hidden infection, that can cause inflammation. So inflammation is huge. If you have chronic pain, I mean, chronic pain can do it as well. This can be another factor for people. Nutrient deficiencies are another big player, and having unhealthy follicles that lead to an unhealthy corpus luteum and progesterone deficiency, especially nutrients like magnesium and B6. These are huge, but all of the nutrients are very important. And then stress. Stress is another huge killer. There's a complex interwoven relationship between cortisol and a lot of the stress hormones and progesterone. And if you look at it from a physiological perspective, we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, but like your body is either going to protect you from stress or get pregnant. It doesn't want to do both at the same time. And it will shunt resources and change pathways and make different things be made and happen if you are in one predominant place, like a stress state, than the other. And so inflammation, stress, and nutrient deficiencies are three of the key players in making what we would call a short luteal phase. And I know that there's a lot of words that I'm throwing around here, and you know, you can like listen to this over and over again. Again, I teach a lot of this inside of Womanhood Wellness, but once you've ovulated, once you have an egg that's ovulated, you go into your luteal phase. That is when progesterone is being made. And if you do not have enough progesterone, that time from ovulation to when your period comes gets shorter. So we see this sometimes in women as they get older in their 30s and 40s having shorter cycles. So time from bleed to bleed gets shorter. This can be because their estrogen is going down and so they ovulate sooner, or their luteal phase is shortening because progesterone isn't robust enough. And this is where learning how to track your own cycle and knowing when and where to test hormones can be really helpful, because we really want to support that progesterone production. Other key signs that you could have low progesterone is having more PMS, so premenstrual syndrome, irritability, moodiness, feeling cramps, and not cramps, that's more painful periods, but like bloating, just feeling really off before your period, or spotting before your period. So if you're like, I'm spotting a little bit and then a day or two comes by and then I start bleeding, that's a classic sign of low progesterone. Or if you're having chemical pregnancies or early miscarriages.
Electrolytes are trending, yes, but they have been in need of our human bodies for all of time. And if you're drinking another popular and delicious salty electrolyte, here's why you should be drinking Relight instead. First of all, have you ever considered the salt source of these other brands? Because most of them just use table salt. Yeah, table salt. You don't want that. Redmond's Relight Powders uses their unrefined ancient sea salt that they mine in Utah. This salt source contains 60 plus trace minerals along with calcium, chloride, potassium, and magnesium in two different forms, glycinate and malate. The minerals that they use in the Relight Powders are all in the appropriate proportions and forms too. The metabolic needs of pregnancy, healing postpartum, and milk making require more minerals than in other times of your life. Pregnancy itself demands huge increases in your blood volume, which takes, you know, more minerals. Relight is the perfect blend to be sipping during your pregnancy or during your labor even, and especially while you're breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, lemon lime, and the strawberry lemonade. But you can try a sample pack and try all the flavors for yourself and see what you think. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% on your entire Redmond order. That includes their OG sea salt, other seasonings, bentonite clays, toothpaste, and more. I just want to say, like, so people get it. If you have a short luteal phase, say you want your luteal phase to be like 12 to 14 days. If it's 9 or 10 days, what might be happening is you actually are conceiving an embryo. And then there is not enough time for all of the hormones to take place to prevent your body having a good implantation, recognizing that it's pregnant, and you just get your period. There's just maybe not enough progesterone impulse and time to then like it, what happens when that progesterone goes high is it lengthens out the cycle by a couple of days. And those couple of days are really key. So That's what's happening. It's not something to take lightly. It is a big deal. And then, the kind of like perimenopausal shorter cycles thing could be like you're having cycles that are 24 or 25 days, you know, or less. But I just wanted to give some numbers to that if people, cause you know, the typical cycle would be like a 28 day cycle, meaning bleed to bleed. And so there's things that we can do if we are having chronically shortened luteal phase, and it is a symptom of kind of a dysfunctional progesterone potentially that we need to work on and change. So
yeah, and you know, there I have a whole course on progesterone in my membership, but you can, there's a lot that you could and should do, but there's also a time and a place for extra progesterone support, and this could be a time, you know, someone in their late 30s, early 40s might be someone who might need that additional progesterone support more than somebody, you know, in their 20s or early 30s. So something to just keep in mind and talk to your doctor about, because you definitely need to have it on hand early on. If you wait until you have your OB-GYN appointment at 12 weeks, like if you're going to have a loss from low progesterone, it's going to have happened before you see your doctor for the first time at that 10 to 12 week appointment. The losses typically happen between 6 and 9 weeks. So with progesterone, the other thing is, yes, you need the time for the embryo to implant, but also it's what holds the baby in the lining. So you could have an implantation, baby could be growing, everything could be good. But if you don't have enough progesterone to sustain, then the body, it's like a dam. Progesterone is what holds the scaffolding, you know, it's what holds everything up. And if you have a drop in that, or you don't have enough, it's not robust enough, which what came from your ovulation, right, quality, then the baby can be lost even if everything else is working well, right? You get pregnant, like sperm is good, egg quality is good. So this is where it's important to understand what's going on with you and why I'm a huge fan of testing mid-luteal phase progesterone for all women, really. And then that leads me into the next thing, number 6, which is hormone fluctuations and early perimenopause. So this is a unique thing that a lot of women around 40 have to start thinking about. Perimenopause is basically the time when what I say to my patients is it's when your ovaries are considering retirement and they aren't sure each month if they're going to retire or not. And there's just a lot of up and down. There's a lot of sometimes your hormones are totally normal. Sometimes they're surging more than normal. Maybe you're getting acne for the first time after, you know, 20 years. You haven't had acne since you were a teenager, or you're feeling irritable. You feel like a teenage girl. You're emotional. Like your hormones are all over the place. And this can happen in perimenopause when the ovaries are sort of sputtering out and they're trying to figure out this new rhythm and this new way of being as you start to transition toward menopause. For some women, perimenopause can be 10 years long. It can be a really long time. It's not just like, oh, I'm having hormonal irregularity, therefore I'm probably going to go into menopause next year. So if you're trying to conceive still, that doesn't mean you're a no for getting pregnant. But what it tells me, if you're having extreme perimenopausal symptoms, is that you need some more hormonal stability. And it starts with your adrenal glands. I'm going to get to stress. That's my next part. But your adrenals are where your stress hormones are made, and your stress and your nervous system play a big role in your adrenals holding steady through your ovarian ups and downs. But doing things like I mentioned, blood sugar balance, having all the key nutrients that you need, you know, having routine practices, getting into nature, like doing all of these things are going to help a lot. But that is a important note that women need to know going into pregnancy at this time, that you could be not only, fertility is hard enough getting pregnant, but if your hormones are also all over the place because you're going through perimenopause, it can make it a little trickier.
Yeah, and harder to track the cycle of when to have the timing of sex and all of that.
Yeah, exactly. But that leads me to number seven, which is stress. And stress matters even more. Stress always matters in becoming pregnant. And when I say stress, it's not just like, oh, go on vacation, like you'll be fine. There's a lot to stress. It's really complex. There's nervous system dysregulation. And to really unpack and uncover stress, which we should probably do a whole episode on this if we haven't, getting into the nervous system healing, what I see a lot in women of this age is sometimes women just haven't found their partner. And that is totally a reality where they were trying, you know, they were dating and maybe they were married and got divorced or had a loss. I mean, I've had patients whose husbands have died already, which is like so sad, you know, and they didn't have a chance to have kids yet or whatever. Like there's so many reasons, but I also see a larger majority of women going into trying to get pregnant around the 40 age because they were career women, which is fine. Mm-hmm. I'm a career woman. Like there's no, that's a beautiful thing, and there are pros and cons. And often the patterns that are in a woman that lead her to thrive in a career and push off having children inherently have sometimes more stress patterns.
No, 100%. It's like they're driven, they're high drive, they function in sympathetic nervous system and deadlines and in climbing the ladder or making a business for themselves or whatever it is. And it's like, it totally makes sense. It's very much like, I mean, and you and I have had our own unique journeys with this, with trying to prioritize being moms, but also having businesses. And it's so hard to flip back and forth. I mean, it would be much easier to just pick one or the other. Doing both 100%. Is not fun, but yeah, it makes total sense. Like if your nervous system is driven towards that kind of life, like you can be really successful in your career. But then when it comes time for you to be open and receiving and in your feminine and the low stress and good high progesterone where you just like are flowing and yin and don't care and blah, 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 like all this stuff. It's just, it's much harder. It's like we become, we turn on to a different track of the way we live our life and we're like buzzing at a higher rate, you know, and we need to take it down several notches, but it's really tough. I mean, therapy, I know you love like the body stuff. For me, therapy has been, I think, the number one reason, because I didn't realize how much I was holding on to. The stuff that was stressing me out was my dysfunctional thought patterns around like perfectionism or like, you know, like maybe family dynamics and stuff like that too, but more about, oh, how am I going to be in the world? I don't know. I can't even think of an example right now. Seriously,
yeah,
I am in
it. Their beliefs. Yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to talk about. I think therapy is amazing. I just think therapy that gets to subconscious beliefs is the most impactful in my experience versus just like cognitively on your conscious mind, tell me what you're thinking. That's more processing of like, just dump, you know, just brain dump to me. That is very therapeutic. But where you really see change in stress and nervous system patterns is getting to those deep subconscious belief patterns, because the beliefs are what drive the behavior. To just have someone stop being stressed or using working out as a therapeutic tool because they're so stressed, which then inherently puts more stress on the system. You know, you have to get to these underlying belief systems of I'm not enough. I'm not going to be loved unless I do X, Y, Z. Like I have to be a perfectionist, you know, because, you know, so many of them boil down to these deep things like I'm not enough. I'm not loved. I'm not good enough. Worthiness. They're very deep. Like you might not think on the conscious surface throughout your day walking around being like, I am not enough. Like, this is why I make this choice. Like, no one really thinks that consciously, but that's what drives so much behavior. And so you kind of have to find what yours is. And it can come from how you were raised. It can come from trauma. It can come from all sorts of different places. And so finding a good practitioner who can dive into that, there's lots of approaches to get to that place. Doing trauma release, if trauma is a part of your pattern, there are so many different things we could unravel here, because people sometimes, if especially you were raised in an environment where there was a lot of stress or trauma, that becomes your normal. That's where you feel comfortable. And for you to like sit down and just relax, it's you, even if someone told you like you can't, because your nervous system's deeper subconscious wiring is that is not safe. You know, there's just so much to unpack there.
It's
so,
like the quote, like, never in my life did I have I seen a relaxed woman or something like that, you know, mm-hmm. or when I was growing up, I never saw a relaxed woman. And that's kind of how it was in my house. Like, my mom was always cleaning, picking things up, mm-hmm. tidying, doing the dishes, doing something. Like, she was never just chilling on the couch. You know, that's like what my dad yeah. was doing.
Right. And, right. But that's feminine. That's feminine energy, is to chill and receive and be in flow and be in this complete opposite of the masculine energy, which, you know, I talk so much about this. I'm sure people are so like eye roll, but I just think that it's important to know why we are here and where it comes from, because our generation, which are the people coming up into their 40s, we were raised in that post-feminism world of like, we can do anything a man can do. We can do it all. And I don't disagree, but it is why our nervous systems are stressed the F out.
Yes, because they still, like, my mom works. She had a 9-to-5 job, mm-hmm. but then she had all the motherhood duties. And it was yes. classic boomer. My dad would get home from work and then just chill on the couch and watch shows and mm-hmm. drink beer, you know? Mm-hmm. And my mom would come home from work and like have all these tasks to still do. And so she yeah. was so burnt out, like never had a break. There was no break. There was no her sitting, you know what I mean? And now I think our millennial generation is going to be kind of coined in terms of the way that kids are raised and stuff, is it's much more 50-50. I mean, not in all situations, obviously, but there's like mm-hmm. a lot more parental, you know, or they've chosen to intentionally take that role on, where like mom is staying at home, cooking, cleaning, doing that kind of thing. Dad is providing. And like, there's a lot of joy that can be brought from that too, when it's chosen and it's intentional and you don't feel trapped, because before feminism, mm-hmm. that was the only option women had.
Totally. And I would have hated that. That would have been terrible.
It's nice to be able to choose. And it's like, okay, I think that that can be a really fulfilling, amazing life too, where there's not resentment built up. But when you don't have a choice, that's when you feel that resentment. Totally. Because actually a lot of women, I mean, and I could totally be one of these women where I do love my work. You, I think, will always need to work. I feel like I could very easily just be mom, you know? Mm-hmm. Although yeah. I think, you know, there would be some cognitive stuff that's not met, like some cognitive needs that are not met in my mind. I don't know. I'd figure out some other way to get it met, I think, like some obsession. But that is the reality, is that women are usually having to work too, and just coming off of this, it's a lot of work settings in general are masculine energy, and
yeah
it's just that hustle bustle and the no reprieve and change for the way that we're feeling about anything. Like, you know, people love to make fun of women maybe like working less or changing the way they work during their cycles, and it's like, you don't know anything, just shut up. Like, I have very easy cycles, but I do notice my cognitive changes mm-hmm. around my cyclical stuff, where I'm not as creative, I'm not as, you know, there's benefits that we could lean into. Like, what's that book, Do Less, I think is the book where she's talking about, like, you know, changing your life around your menstrual cycle. Okay, anyway, I know we have a lot more to get through. I have a confession to make that will probably knock the socks off of some of you crunchy moms. And please don't make fun of me for this, but listen, I don't make bone broth, okay? I don't. Sue me. I like to buy it instead. And maybe one day I'll get my act together, but for now I rely on brands like Fond to make real, actual bone broth from scratch, just the way that I would at home. Fond uses actual bones, not just rehydrated powders like a lot of brands. And their animals are verified regenerative, 100% grass-fed or pasture-raised, and the vegetables that they use are organic. And as you've heard us talk about in the past, there are certain foods, like bone broth, that have been used in pregnant and postpartum populations throughout human history, preferentially more so in those populations, due to their healing benefits on the body. So providing the connective tissue nutrition or optimal gut health and healing so that our bodies can make new life healthfully. Fond has several different flavors to choose from in beef and chicken broth, from unflavored to things like the classic garlic and lemon, to even a turmeric and black pepper with added health benefits. but then they also have foundational fats like tallow and lard as well. Make your family building season easy and choose Fond for your shelf-stable glass bottle bone broths that you can use in soups, with rice, or just for sipping like I do because they taste that good. Check the link in the show notes or go to fondregenerative.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 10% off and nourish yourself with Fond.
Yeah, that's okay. No, I think it's good. And, you know, obviously this goes without saying, but I don't want to like not mention it in that things are more expensive now. Like,
oh, yeah.
Sometimes we literally have to work. Women don't get to choose yes. to just stay home. I mean, that's the current situation we're in right now. You know, it's like, this isn't a choice. Like, I have to work. A lot of women do, but that's where I'm saying is, you know, we were working like men, and there's just so many things that depletes in us, and it becomes more obvious when you've had 20 years of that work, you know, going into a pregnancy around 40. Because most of the time women going into their 40s aren't like, I've actually just been staying at home not doing anything for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, I have my husband and we just for 20 years decided not to get pregnant. You know, it's like sometimes that happens, but more often than not, a woman has had a career who is going into this space. So that's another thing to think about and how to nurture your nervous system and your stress. And there's a lot to uncover there. So again, well, probably another podcast or join the membership or see a therapist. There's so much you can do. The next thing that we'll talk about is detoxification and liver support. So this is another thing that matters a lot at this age, not only because you've had more years of exposure to toxins and alcohol and, you know, fill in the blank, you know, you literally have that accumulation, but you also have the hormones that are going all over the place. You have more exposure to gut issues that affect your bile and your gut health. Like, just think of it like a, I don't know, like a pipe that when you build a house, everything's like clean, everything is empty, there's nothing in there. And, you know, over time, things just build up, things accumulate, stuff happens with time. And that happens in the body too. And so livers can become stagnant, bile ducts can become stagnant, your gut health can become impacted. And so this is just even more important because you need to support yourself even more and you have that more toxin accumulation over time. So it's just something to be more mindful of and diving deeper into learning how to detox and support yourself well. The next thing to think about is it's not all about you as a female. It is also about your partner. And unless you are choosing a younger man, which does happen, absolutely, more likely than not, your partner that you're choosing is also going to be of a similar-ish age to you and or older. I have a lot of people who go through IVF, who the woman is going into her 40s, early 40s, and her partner's in his 50s. And you know, everyone can choose their like path of what they're doing, but there are a little bit more like considerations in an older male partner too. Men's sperm does not go down with age in the sense of count like our egg quality does, but the quality absolutely can for all the same reasons that egg quality goes down. Longer time of toxin exposure, more mitochondrial insults over time, more oxidative stress, you know, chronic inflammation in them, more alcoholic beverages, more hot dogs, more like all the things. Like there's just more of that over time and your regeneration capacity is just not as great as it was when you were in your 20s. Your testosterone goes down. Men's testosterone does go down over time. Can a man have a healthy, robust testosterone when he's older? For sure, but it's a healthy for an older man. It's not the same testosterone level as a 20-year-old guy. It's just not. And we just are seeing collectively a huge reduction in testosterone across the board. I have young men like in their 20s starting out their adult life with a severely low testosterone level.
Like, so what would you say is severely low? Like share some numbers.
Yeah, so a healthy man should have a total testosterone between 700 and 900. It could be higher for sure.
That's high. That's not happening.
Oh God, that's not happening. But that's what should be happening. That's healthy. I would say what I see is a healthy normal now. Like, oh wow, you're healthy. Like if I see a patient with a testosterone between 550 and 700, I'm like, whoa. You're doing really good, you know, like naturally, not on testosterone support. I'm like, what? what? Like, what are you doing? Like, my husband, I'm like, his testosterone's 650 or something, which for him in this environment, I'm like, you are doing so good.
That's amazing. You know,
I know. I'm like, good for you, which is why it's so confusing why we had infertility. I'm like, your testosterone's great, but his was a blockage issue, you know? Yeah. But what I see more often than not is men's testosterone in the 300s. I would say that's most common what I see, like 300 to 400. But I absolutely see quite a few men less than 300. That, you guys, and they move the level where they're like, this is normal. No, it's not. A man in their 20s or 30s should not have a testosterone lower than 300. Like, you are going to feel like absolute crap, no energy, don't want to get up in the morning, you don't want to work out, you can't put on muscle, there's no drive, like, you just want to stay home and play video games and eat like crap because you feel like crap. And they don't even know that they feel like crap because they probably don't know what it's like to actually feel good.
Okay, I think that Wes's testosterone 2 years ago, and it appeared on his labs that maybe he had his white blood cell count was a little high, so maybe he was like acutely ill. I don't know if testosterone could be affected in that sort of a way that quickly, but I think it was like 386.
Yeah, that's what I see is like normal.
But that does not, I was shocked. That did not match up with anything that I know about him or witness in him or our.
That didn't match up with what I know about him either. Typically, when I see men with a testosterone like that, there's some level of not that. Like, it's possible that it's just shorter acutely or like lower acutely for him because, yeah, he does not strike me as someone who has a testosterone of that low. No. But unless he has like drive issues, you know, like not, I don't know what he is about. I really want to get up at 5 a.m. and go work out, you know, like.
No, he does. No, that he does not want to do that. I will say that.
Probably,
that is true.
He's an enduring pattern like Mike. He will persevere. He will push through. Yes. But it might not be what's inherently in him. You know what I mean?
He's not the kind of dude that like cannot wait to get up and go to the gym and stuff like that. He does it because he's. Yes. He knows that he should, basically. But
and he grew up in an environment where you just push through.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter if you don't feel like it. Like, that's what you have to do. And
he can be a little bit like toxic positivity. Like, he'll look a little mopey. And I'm like, what's wrong? He's like, today's the best day of my life. And I'm like, okay. Like, you know.
And totally.
I love that about him. But I'm like, you are dissociating.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, but that can happen. So that to me makes sense. Because men can learn that, you know, they can put on their big boy pants and go provide and do all this stuff, but they inherently physiologically don't have it in them like they would if they had a full amount of testosterone.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder what it is now that he's been consistently working out. Like, he should get it tested again because worked out more now in the last like 9 months than he ever has. And so, I mean, since us being together at least. So that'll be interesting to see. But okay, anyway, let's keep going. Yeah.
Men need to do physical labor, whether that's working out at a gym, chopping wood, like doing physical things, not just sitting at a computer, which is, I know, what most people's life is now, my husband included. So that's really important for testosterone. Okay, so the last two pieces is just time. So a woman who is 30 years old, you know, thinking about getting pregnant, how long do we have to try naturally? How long do we give this, you know, before we get more support, before I give up? You know, these kind of conversations don't have to be had for a woman in her late 20s, early 30s, as much as they do for a woman in her late 30s, early 40s. Time is of the essence to some degree. Can you become pregnant after 40 with a healthy baby? Absolutely. However, time plays a role. If you are just starting this journey, you have realized by listening to this, wow, I think I have a lot of these issues. Like, I didn't know. Maybe I have short luteal phase, not enough progesterone. Maybe I'm having metabolic issues. Maybe my husband has low testosterone, whatever. These things take time to support, reverse, you know, improve, and you need to realize how much time you have. This is why testing things like AMH might be important and realizing what your goals are. Do you want more than one kid? You know, how long are you going to give yourself to try? And I hate having these conversations, but they have to happen of, you know, if you are not pregnant by, you know, like when I work with someone, I ask them their goals and I don't push them on whatever they want to do. But we need to find out, is becoming pregnant naturally the ultimate goal? And if that doesn't happen, it's just, we're done. Either we're going to adopt, we've accepted we don't want kids. Like, what is it? Or is it moving on to something like IUI or IVF? If that's true, at what time? How long do you want to try naturally before you move into that route? what signs would make you want to go that route. So we need to have these conversations, and it's different for every person what they decide. If getting pregnant is the ultimate goal, not just naturally, I typically recommend taking at least 6 months to optimize as much as possible, because even if you go through IVF, you want to be healthy, because IVF does not bypass egg quality and it does not bypass sperm quality, and you will waste more time if you go do IVF egg retrievals with ovarian stimulation and all these hormones. They just amplify what your existing physiology is. If you have inflammation and metabolic dysfunction and nutrient deficiencies and all of these things, and you go into IVF, it's just going to blow that up even more. IVF does not make you healthy. And fertility requires some level of health, either at the egg retrieval part, like you have to have some level of egg health and sperm health, or at the implantation part. And working on it beforehand is the most efficient, fastest track way to have a better outcome versus just going straight into IVF, which is what a lot of people are pushed into when they turn 40. It's like, oh, you're 40 years old, go into IVF. And it's like, whoa, let's pause. I'm not saying we shouldn't, and I do think it's the appropriate choice for some people, but doing that work no matter what is key. Even if you have a low AMH and low egg reserve, and there's a high likelihood that you'll need like an egg donor, that's another thing that comes up with women in their 40s, is that they aren't making healthy enough eggs or enough eggs for them to get pregnant with their eggs, but they want to carry a baby and they want to use their husband's sperm or whatever decision or reason for it. You still need to have a healthy vessel to carry that baby if that's what you're choosing. So it's still important to do this work. So that's kind of like the last thing that I want to leave us with, is the first thing the conventional world does is IVF, right? When you're going into your 40s, oh, you're old, let's go do IVF. But we need to look at all of these other things first. And if you decide to go down that route, this is the most important thing that you can do, in my opinion, is optimize beforehand.
And I mean, again, if we sound like a broken record, but really, we should be living like this all the time.
Yes.
Because if this is how we get the marker of fertility, then it is the, you know, healthiest version. Like, it is a marker of health in general. And so I wonder, it would be so cool if we could extrapolate out, maybe in the future, like with different technologies, how these sorts of, do people who have higher fertility have lower rates of, you know, cancers or other chronic illnesses and things like that? Because it's like, okay, well, if you have to be in a certain type of health state in order to have good fertility, potentially there's less of that. I don't know. You know, I'm not suggesting that right now,
but there's been studies on that, I'm sure. And because it's all the same stuff. Mitochondrial damage, DNA damage, which is what damages the quality of egg and sperm, is also what leads to cancer, because you get DNA breakdown and damage that causes cancer. And yes, there are some people who have more of that genetic predisposition for the weak link to break in that department. So what I tell everyone is everyone has a ladder with a weak link, right? Everybody has one. You're not born without one. That's why we look at family history. There's genetic components. There's things that make us more susceptible, but the environment is what leads to that break. So it's not like you are born with that as your end all be all. It's just, that's the thing that you need to kind of protect and be more supportive around. But things like fertility and cancer, at least, are very similar from the environmental damage component. Some people could have an infertility issue, but they don't have that genetic weak link of cancer. Theirs might be heart disease or dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever. But at the end of the day, if you look at all disease, it can all basically be boiled down to what is your sort of genetic weak link, and then the environment is put on that, and whatever the unhealthy environment is with your weak link is what disease you get. They're all the same. They're all rooted in inflammation, stress, nervous system dysregulation, trauma, toxins, infections. They're all from that, you know?
Yeah. If it's not a congenital or something like that issue, and if it's one of these lifestyle chronic disease illness things, then yeah, I mean, it's like, think about all the metabolic diseases, the diabetes, the heart disease, all the different stuff, that all of that is epigenetic expression from a poor environment.
Yeah. So outside of like physical things like endometriosis, blocked tubes, you know, physical blockages, those aren't necessarily, but from just a fertility perspective, anything that you do to improve your fertility is going to improve your health in all of these other departments. And so that's what I tell my patients too, and even my male patients, because I think in their mind, they're like, oh, we just like getting pregnant is like all people think about. And I always tell them, you know, yes, getting pregnant is important and optimizing your sperm and doing these things for a short time, you know, then you're kind of off the hook. But if you really take this into practice, you are going to be a healthier father. You're going to probably mm-hmm. live longer for your yeah. kids. And there's so much more to it. Or you'll have a better sex drive. You'll have a great, you know, testosterone picture, because anytime you do anything to improve your health, female or male, you're only improving every single other aspect of your health, because fertility is that early link that can break for a lot of people and show and highlight where more greatness could be had, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's, to me, it's a beautiful tool to check. And what I want to leave us with is for anyone listening who is not yet 40, who's maybe in their 30s, maybe you're uncoupled, which I don't really, I mean, I'm sure people are listening to this who aren't always coupled. This is most important, because the sooner you start working on this, the better. Because just like we're saying, if you have learned this at 35, let's say, and you don't yet have a partner, but you know you want kids, if you start taking these practices into heart at 35, and let's say you meet your partner at 38, and then you're ready to have kids at 40. Oh my gosh, you've been doing 5 years of this? Like, you are going to roll into a 40-year-old pregnancy so beautifully. Yeah. So, you know, start thinking of this now. It is literally never too early to start optimizing your fertility, even if you don't have a partner. It's like, this is, if being a mother is important to you, these things are absolutely key.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for that. It's kind of like boom, drop. This is, we should always be living in a way where we can get pregnant at any moment.
Totally.
It's a lot.
100%. I know. It's complicated. I was like thinking in the shower today about a reel I was going to do. None of the reels I do ever really do well, but I was just like, in 1 minute, you're 25 and freaking out that your birth control maybe didn't work and you could be pregnant. And the next minute, you're 36 and freaking out that you're not pregnant again. You know, it's yeah. like we as women in these different seasons, it means such different stuff. And it is ironic that at the time when we're theoretically the most fertile is when we're blocking it. And then once we actually want it so badly, it can feel more challenging. And it's the irony of modern womanhood.
Yeah, modern motherhood, man. Okay, well, be on the lookout for part two in the, you know, pregnancy and birth stats of pregnancy over 40. And thank you for everything, and we'll see you guys next week.
If your heart aches for a baby, whether you're dreaming of motherhood someday or you're already on the path and it hasn't been going as you imagined, I want you to know that you do not have to do this alone. Consider joining me inside of my Womanhood Wellness membership. You get a custom blueprint unique to your woman essence type, which is where you are right now on the journey. You have access to all of my courses and content, which includes how to boost egg and sperm quality, the energetics of fertility, investigating fertility, optimizing IVF if that's a path you have to go down, navigating pregnancy loss. I have my Essential Foundations course where you learn all the things that you really need to know to have a thriving hormonal infertility system. You learn the Hormone Handbook, where I dive deep into all the different hormonal imbalances and what you can do naturally to rebalance them. I have deep dive courses on vaginal microbiome, in detoxing, on mindset. I give you my natural medicine protocols. You have the ability to order labs on your own. You get discounts on supplements and other products. I have organized the community by your season. So if you are breaking up with birth control, you can jump in a chat with women in that exact same season. If you are trying to conceive, or if you are going through pregnancy loss or infertility or IVF or low libido, there is a group of women who are going through the same thing. We also have full community areas like our breakfast club, where every Monday we share what we're having for breakfast to inspire each other, and our daily flow, where we connect as a collective community and do challenges and learn from each other in that way. On top of all of that, I do a monthly live Q&A where you can bring your questions, and they're always recorded so you can listen if you can't make them live. And then then I have various calls with other practitioners like Sadie, our amazing personal development coach, and so many others, where you will be able to receive healing and learn other perspectives. Being a member inside Womanhood Wellness also gives you discounts to join my upcoming immersions. Take around 22 women for a month to dive deep into a specific topic, like decoding desire, or building your dream life, or navigating painful periods, or navigating unexplained infertility. This is the place that you want to be if you want to know all of the natural root cause and supportive measures that you can take to optimize your womanhood journey and your path to and through motherhood. Head to womanhoodwellness.com and use code podcast to save 20% off your first month. I can't wait to see you inside. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.